Okay,
we're on a team of friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they say it's the exact same spot, both sides. They're outside, like say that.
Oh my god, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Alright, Lisa, how are you ready for this?
The cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular hit.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day, wherever you are listening, whether it be on the AM stations, whether it's live via the web, or whether you're listening via the podcast, it's good to have you along, and welcome to edition 414 of These Here Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries humanity has ever faced, UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Tonight, Dave Perlot with his take on it, our British correspondent and publisher of UFO Review, Stuart Miller, abductee activist John Velez, and taking us home tonight, Alfred Lemberg. Yes. These are strange days indeed. Take, for instance, the British newspaper The Sun. It reported on Thursday of this week that more than 700 UFOs have been reported to the Ministry of Defense in the past 6 years. The ministry has received 714 reports of mysterious flying objects since January 2001. But Junior Defense Minister Derek Twigg said only 12 of them were worthy of future consideration. None were thought to be a threat to the UK. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Well, UFOs are not considered by the United States Air Force to be a threat to national security.
Twigg's comments came in a House of Commons written reply to Liberal Democrat Lynn Featherstone. It said, reports of UFOs are analyzed solely to consider whether there is any reason to believe UK airspace has been compromised by the reported activity, Mr. Twigg said. I guess the interesting thing here is what it was when Junior Defense Minister Twigg said that only 12 of them, their reports, were worthy of further consideration. What exactly does that mean? Only 12. Is the Ministry of Defense examining those 12 more closely? And if not, why not? And one would think that even if only one was worthy of further consideration, surely the MOD would get some of their scientists or investigators examining the report more closely. Only 12. That's less than 27% of the Project Blue Book unexplainables. 27% of Project Blue Book, the U.S. Air Force investigation group, when they closed their doors, 27% were inexplicable. But UFOs don't exist. The Air Force couldn't come up with a reason for what it was that people were seeing and reporting. Strange days indeed. Some Canadian UFO news. Ucluelet in British Columbia. A reporting witness said that they saw an object hovering a few days ago, And again on the night of October 2nd at 3 a.m., the witness saw the same object again, but not as closely as before. He was with a friend, and they actually tried to make some footage with the video camera that they had, but because of background lighting, whatever that means, couldn't get any footage. Now, the unusual thing about October 2nd was that they noticed two aircraft flying around or below the object, as if the aircraft were observing the object themselves. Witness said you could definitely tell the difference between the planes and the UFO. Well, any four-year-old could tell the difference, yeah? In Saskatchewan, out of Saskatoon, Brian Vike reports that a witness telephoned him just after a sighting took place on October 5th at around 11 p.m. The witness and his wife were headed home from a book discussion and were stopped at a red light on 8th Street in Saskatoon when they saw three bright lights in a triangular pattern in the sky that was not consistent with any helicopter or plane that the witness has ever seen. The triangular lights on the bottom were bigger or brighter than the one on top center. At first, the object was hovering in one spot, and then it suddenly moved quickly in a straight diagonal line to the southeast and up in altitude. And since the lights kept an airtight formation, the witness believed that there was some kind of actual aircraft. They followed the object south of 8th Street and then turned south for about 3 minutes. Sometimes the object would stop and hover again, and then it would dart around. Definitely Mars or Venus. It was silent, quite low, and close to them. They lost it after a short time, but the witness almost felt as if the pilot of that craft knew that he was tailing it, because it seemed to play a bit of a hide-and-seek game with the witness for a bit. Hide-and-seek game, huh? No, it was swamp gas. No, it was the moon. No, it was a weather balloon or a crash test dummy. It was one of the several. Anyway, it couldn't have been a UFO because UFOs don't exist. In North Surrey, B.C., on Saturday evening, September 30th, a witness decided to hook up his camera with his new DVD recorder and let it run from about 6 in the evening till midnight. At around 8:30 on the disc, he saw a bright flash come from a small gap in the heavy overcast. And that's as he played it back. He saw what looked like the Starship Enterprise sliding through the sky between two layers of cloud. When he stopped and looked at the footage one frame at a time, it turned out to be three bright white globes in a vertical triangle with a fourth white globe next to the lower left-hand corner globe. And on looking at it even more closely, zoomed in, he could see numerous gray-colored globes clustered around the white ones. There were white and gray globes, and all the globes appeared to be touching, and the object must have been pretty darn big as the camera was set on wide angle and the object shows up plainly. It was also moving at about the speed of a commercial airliner, as it only took 4 or 5 frames to cross the gap in the clouds. The direction of travel was mostly east-southeast. Thanks to Brian Vike of HBCC UFO Research for all three of those stories. And doubtlessly we will hear more like them in the centuries to come, and they will still deny that there is anything like UFOs, man. Like, they just don't exist.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlock.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list that seems to go on forever, with only the title changing. This time the thread is entitled, Why Are the ETs Here? It's a valid question. If you're one of the majority percentile of all North Americans that believe there is intelligent life elsewhere in this universe, you also have to believe it is possible for those other beings to be capable of visiting us here on this tiny blue marble. Now, the listeners who have posted comments to this question are numerous. And everyone seems to have a different reason as to why the ETs are here. The post originally began with a transcription from the miniseries Taken, produced by Steven Spielberg, and involves an interview with an extraterrestrial. Now, before anyone goes off on a tangent about how Taken was a fictional series developed from a myriad of real-life data gathered from experiencers or abductees, let's get into the thread itself and how it developed. Because in truth, the transcript actually only ended up being food for thought. The thread went on from the transcript to discuss the possibility that ETs are merely an artificial intelligence. Think very smart robot or computer. Some posters stated quite bluntly that they have no more clue as to why ET is here than they do about the things that motivate another alien species, our friend the dog. Some suggest that ET is here to gain knowledge, to allow themselves to grow. Well, that all sounds very similar to what the fictional interview with the alien from Taken was saying. And the actual theories are endless. They're here to study us. They're here to enslave us. They're here to help us. They're here to save us from ourselves. They're here to guide us forward. They're here to keep us from moving forward. And they're here to learn the secret of what makes our strawberry ice cream taste so good. Ask anyone involved in ufology, and I'm sure you'll get an opinion on why ET is here. Combine that with the reports we've had of short gray aliens, tall gray aliens, Nordic aliens, reptilian aliens, and aliens too strange to even describe, and you'll get a whole new set of criteria of why ET is here. I've even gotten involved in discussion about why ET is here, saying that I believe they're curious and just want to know what's going on. Although if they've witnessed the things that have been going on lately, I'm sure they're leaving by droves because they're disgusted with what we as human beings are doing to each other and the planet around us. The problem that I have with why is ET here is that I believe we're putting the cart in front of the horse. And we're not even smart enough to try to get the animal to push it. Matter of fact, I'd say we're trying to get the poor thing to try and pull it backwards. It's not an easy thing to do by any stretch of the imagination. We really do not need to strain our brains and try to determine why ET is here. What we need to do, more than anything else, is determine who ET is. We need to find out where ET is coming from. And that information may give us something to work with. We need to prove that ET is real. ET is here. And once we have done all of that, we can easily find out why ET is here. So to put it very bluntly, it's not why ET is here. The smarter question is, who is ET? But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
Why is ET here? the M&M's.
Like I said, strawberry ice cream.
Haven't we had this discussion before over the past 8 years, coming up for 9 years?
That's what I'm saying. It goes on forever.
Doesn't
it? Always comes up every now and again. We beat it to death. Why is ET here?
And nobody has the answer, but we'll discuss it endlessly.
Oh, yeah. And they will defend their theory to the death. It's like, I know why ET is here, and this is what I'm saying, and if you don't believe me, then you're wrong.
What kind of idiot are you that doesn't believe me? There's certainly a little bit of that. Not a lot, fortunately,
no,
on the UFO updates list. The days of the real heavy-duty flame wars are long gone.
Thankfully.
Yes, well, the moderator has finally wisened up now and doesn't sit and grin as he posts something that he knows is going to cause all kinds of problems.
No more putting the...
Now, let me see who's going to respond to this straight away. And I won't mention any names on the radio, but 8 times out of 10, I nail it completely. You know, I've gotten to know a lot of the posters on the UFO updates list over the last few years.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Dave Furlott has a couple of books out, Contract for Deceit and Common Foe. I think they're both still available in one form or another. Are they not, Dave?
Oh, they're both still available in print.
In print?
Oh, yes.
Dave is working on a fourth one and waiting to hear about a third one from a publisher. So all kinds of things going on. If you click Dave's picture at tonight's program listing page, down the left-hand side at the top of the page there. It'll take you to all kinds of interesting information about Dave Furlot. Dave, we will talk to you next week. Thank you, sir.
Sure, thank you.
The current issue of UFO Review, number 17, The Very Bad Taste Edition, is available from UFOReview.net, Stuart Miller's website, Stuart Miller's e-zine. Also, he's our British correspondent, and he's also waiting patiently on the line for me to stop talking and say, good evening, Stuart Miller.
Good evening, Errol.
How are you, sir?
Need I remind you, 2:30 in the morning here, well, a little flaky.
Yeah, well, that's a stupid question on my part, but I don't like to remind you of the fact that it is 2:30. You're all too aware of it already. 2:30 in Cheshire in the United Kingdom. What was this mystery that you were telling me, a breaking story when we spoke earlier today, and you made me wait 79 hours to hear what it is?
Indeed, you need to brace yourself, Errol, for a massive anticlimax. On Tuesday, the 17th, between the hour of 10 and 11 o'clock Pacific time, there will be, quote, a major SETI Institute announcement.
Oh.
I think you need to apply logic to this very quickly.
Yes. It's not a wow signal.
I think that's the one thing it won't be.
Yeah.
I think it's the one thing we all want it to be.
Yes.
But, of course, you will know that Seth has said, sorry, actually, Seth.
Dr. Shostak, yes.
Has said many times in the past in print, and probably on air as well, that there is no way that SETI could keep quiet or keep secret the news of a signal and hold it back in this manner, because that's not what they're... He said that. He has been... I mean, and if it turns out to be a wow signal, the first thing I'm going to do is say, Seth, you lied.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, radio telescopes, those of you that saw Contact will recognize one of the people who head up SETI. Seth Shostak is one.
Jill Tartar. Who, when flying in a light aircraft, I think it was with her husband, failed to recognize or to identify correctly a large glowing yellow orb in the far distance, which later turned out to be the moon.
She fessed up to it on in a television documentary. I fell about laughing, I have to say. Carl Sagan's book Contact, the female astronomer in that story was based on Jill Tartar. And Jill Tartar and Seth Shostak run the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, scanning billions and billions of sparkly lights out there, desperately looking for a radio signal that might indicate that there is intelligent life out there.
I think it's probably got something to do with a financial announcement, or maybe Seth has developed acne and that requires a public statement, or closing. They're giving up.
They're giving up, yeah.
Yep.
They're going to get lives and leave the frustrating work to the crazy ufologists.
We shall be keeping an eye on that.
Well, yeah, that'll be an interesting...
In case anybody wants to check it up, but there really is nothing more to that statement, but it can be found on the Space Reference website, spaceref.com, in their calendar section.
Mm. How come only Space Ref has refed it?
Well, does anybody pay attention to SETI?
Well, you and I do, because we like to stir things up by posting articles by Seth Shostak.
It's a good point, that, Aaron. This is the only place I've heard of it. I suppose somebody has to break the story first, and Space Ref seem to have done that.
Good for Space Ref. And I wonder what they did to incur the pleasure of the Honorable Doctor.
Maybe they know as well what the statement's going to be about. You know that very first item you led with from the UK Sun?
Right.
There's a couple of dodgy bits in that. I'm not going to go so far as to say barefaced lies.
Well, nobody from the MOD is listening.
It's a matter of interpretation, but you need to read that statement in the context of the publication of the Condyne report.
Yes.
Can I just say, by the way, the MP who asked the question, which in the British Houses of Parliament, which...
Lynn Featherstone, yes?
Yeah, I know her. I knew her when she was a teenager.
Ah.
You need to read this with the Condyne report in the background, because they start off by saying that, although they phrase it slightly differently, the usual stuff about UFOs not being an air threat.
I
think the way they describe it is that Britain is not in peril from alien warships descending from the skies.
Well, yeah, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
Well, the Condyne report says the opposite, that these things, whatever they are, can be a threat to aircraft. The guy's talking out of his what's-its.
So this is the left hand at the MOD not knowing what the right hand at the MOD is doing, yes?
Absolutely. Guy's name, Derek Twigg, junior defense minister.
Good old Twiggy.
Later on in the report, they mention another junior defense minister who had made a statement earlier in the year, Don Twigg, who denied that the MOD had ever run a UFO project. In other words, it says that any coordinated attempt was made to determine if UROs were alien spacecraft. Well, the Condyne report addressed that. So,
yeah.
Amongst, obviously, a large number of other possibilities as well.
So Nick Pope is full of it.
I'm glad that you said that and that I didn't.
I'm sure if Nick were listening, and he may be later at the archive, I'm sure that he would understand what I meant by that. His job never existed at the Ministry of Defense,
oh,
apparently.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
You meant it with that sort of hint of...
Oh, come on, Stuart.
Right. One of my favorite subjects came up during the week with a little bit of mystery attached to it, namely the fact that the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig, Germany, is going to be issuing a major paper on the DNA of Neanderthals quite soon. And a Turkish news site called Zaman, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
made this announcement and said that the report was likely to say that there was no explanation within evolution for the jump between Neanderthal DNA and Homo sapien DNA.
What it's suggesting is that the Homo sapien DNA just suddenly appeared for no reason at all.
Effectively, yes. The trouble is that that news report on that Turkish site was whipped down and disappeared almost as soon as it, well, actually, to use the words I used on my own website, it came down as quickly as a strip of G-string. It wasn't up there for very long at all. Don't know why.
Now, that's an interesting... Did I post that? I think I posted something
post
in reference
something.
To...
Yes, you did. You posted something, a New Scientist article on it.
Mm-hmm.
We just seem to be edging closer with this very, very slowly. We get these sort of reports about evolution can't explain this or can't explain that, but we just edge closer and closer. Don't actually think a scientist is actually going to say, well, we can't answer this, therefore the answer has to be that...
we're
ET,
all lab rats, and
well, whatever,
ET sowed the humans on the planet. I don't want to say it's starting to sound like it, but it certainly is starting to sound like it, isn't it? We have 3 minutes left. I have still not heard how Paul Kimball's symposium went in Halifax, Nova Scotia today. And I don't know if you've heard. I doubt it.
I'm sure Paul is preoccupied
with
more
guests.
Important things than letting us know how he's got on. But I just really, really hope it went well.
I have a feeling that the walk-in traffic was considerable.
Well, I hope so, because I am beginning to form the opinion that now is not the moment for UFO conferences, and if that is the case, if I'm right, I think that's very sad, because it's...
I think there's still the interest out there, Stuart. I mean, witness, this program is still on the air, about to go into its ninth year. I think what it is that there have been so many documentaries, and there are so many radio programs now that cover the subject quite... well, some of them cover it really badly, but there are the interest level, I don't think it's dropped off. I think they know more than we used to know 10 years ago.
Well, that may be true, Errol, but look at the speaker lineup that Paul Kimball organized. I mean, you...
Phenomenal.
I would almost go as far as to say it was unique. It did actually cross my mind to fly over.
Mm-hmm.
I just very briefly got time to make the observation that Nobel Prize winner and astrobiologist Baruch Bloomberg has recently said that we should keep looking for extraterrestrial life but not hold our breath. And he said that at a recent speech at some university. And in doing so, he reminded me of something that we tend to overlook within ufology, which is that many of us within ufology look to science to lead the way and to take up the baton, so to speak, forgetting that science is already doing so via disciplines like astrobiology and exobiology, and yet somehow we just ignore them and overlook them and don't give them any consideration or acknowledgement. It's because what we really want from science is we want science to come and look at the cases.
Yes.
And science is looking at the question of extraterrestrial life, but not in the way that we want.
And David Grinspoon, who a former NASA astrobiologist, just won himself the Carl Sagan Award.
Indeed. Yes.
Indeed, this past week, and we have to have David back on the program. An interesting, interesting man. Stuart Miller, thank you, sir. It's been good, as usual.
My pleasure.
And we will talk to you again in about 3 or 4 weeks.
And Earl, I wish you better.
Thank you. I wish me better, too. UFOReview.net. Go download the latest issue. It's free. Email from Bubba. It came in a few moments ago. Great take, Dave, aimed at Dave Furlot, and Dave's take on it tonight. The theme of your take is exactly why it's so important to have abductee spokesperson John Velez on the program, and opinions like those you just expressed praised. Nobody tells a story without making assumptions about this weird problem better than Velez. It's not an easy trick for someone personally involved. Any human being affected by this would want to know why, and why more than just about anything else. So it's extremely difficult to walk the line of objective data and resist attractive conclusions. But it's also not an easy trick for a writer or an observer of the phenom to do the same. Nice job, Dave. Many of us appreciate it. From Bubba down there in Carolina. And speaking of John Velez of the Abductee Information Center, he joins us on the line from his home down there in New York. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Errol, and I'm glad to hear you're feeling better. And Bubba is psychic, because the theme of my little 16-minute dissertation tonight is going to be that I want some answers.
You and tens of thousands of other people.
Yeah. Actually, you're one of the few people that can testify to the fact that I've had the opportunity over the years, because of my affiliation with Bud Hopkins, to literally meet and work with hundreds of abduction experiencers. And, you know, the points that I bring up in terms of responding to theories that are put out there to explain the abduction experiences are always the same group of reasons that I use. The theories that have been put out thus far to explain the experiences that abductees are reporting have always fallen short in terms of not fully addressing the data, the material that's being reported and presented. They always will pick on one aspect, focus on that, and then dismiss the rest as having been explained by virtue of this one particular detail. And that's not really science and doesn't really address the issue or answer any questions. And I've been very disappointed the last 10 or 12 years that I've been involved in this that no one has come up with a credible or reasonable explanation for the reports. I got to the point on the list where I had repeated myself so many times that I was ready to start giving my answers numbers. And just, you know, when somebody came up with some phony baloney explanation or theory, I just go, number 7, you know. Jerome Clark, who is the author of a wonderful book, the UFO book, Encyclopedia of the Extraterrestrial, has already taken the time to kind of catalog the points that I'm always continually repeating and bringing up. Again, I always come at this from the viewpoint of a protagonist. It's not just based on belief. It has a lot to do with knowledge that I've gained from years and years of working with large groups of abductees. Number one, abductees are generally credible people. I've said this over and over again. They're ordinary, to all appearances, normal, highly functional individuals who tell their stories with sincere conviction, with the same tone as when someone's telling the truth. Point number two, most abductees have no motive to deceive. Very few, in fact, seek publicity, and most prefer to avoid it. Any abductee that comes forward is risking their jobs, their reputations, their social relationships, marriages, you name it, in the name of reporting these experiences. Number three, children describe key elements of the abduction experience even when too young to have fallen under media influence. You know, a lot of people say that people have been watching science fiction movies since the 50s and kind of get stuck in the subconscious, and now we're regurgitating it 30 years later as, a false memory of abductions. And this number three that I just read, the fact that children describe key elements of the experiences kind of blows that away. Number four, this is one of the important ones. Psychopathology has no answer for the phenomenon. No known mental aberration accounts for the reports, and abductees score within normal ranges on the usual psychological scales. The only distinctive characteristics of abductees are those related to post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a condition found among victims of abuse and emotional shock, but known to originate only from actual experiences. I can vouch for that. I paid for, out of pocket, a whole series of psychological tests in order to have myself evaluated, and I fell within normal parameters right down the line. I mean, you know, I have some neurosis, and within normal ranges, and the only symptoms that I showed, according to the doctor, and the only thing that she brought up was that I had symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Number five. Multiple witnesses report some abductions, and their descriptions corroborate or complement one another. This business of, it's just one isolated individual that claims that such and such, it's not like that in every case. There are many, many cases in the files of Bud Hopkins, Dr. John Mack, and David Jacobs of multiple witnesses, multiple experiences. Number six, physical evidence in the form of ground traces, body marks, and disappearing pregnancies confirm the reports, regardless of how some people have a tendency to dismiss them as peripheral or not having any substance to them. Physical evidence is physical evidence. If tire tracks at the scene of a crime are considered evidence for the getaway vehicle, then I would imagine that a ground trace where grass has been scorched at 1800 degrees and the ground desiccated to the point where it won't absorb liquids anymore, and where plant and vegetative material in the area is genetically altered, I guess that should be considered physical evidence as well. I've already spent time talking about the body marks on the abductees, specifically the scoop marks, and how unique they are, and the feedback that I've gotten from physicians about them, so that there is physical evidence in terms of the abduction reports. I know a lot of people think that these are just flights of imagination on our part. Point number seven kind of addresses that. The reports maintain a consistency of sequence and content over time and distance. For all the Hollywood imagery, the variety of science fiction plots, and the sheer potential for creative fantasy inherent in a theme as bizarre as alien abduction, fact remains that abductees tell curiously impersonal and uninventive stories. The abductee is not the hero of his own tale. Rather, he's a victim, the passive pawn in a drama that's devoid of idiosyncratic features. And the reports interchange with little difference but the captive's name. I've mentioned over and over again, you've heard me use the expression that many letters that I've gotten from abductees, that it's basically the same letter and only the name seems to change at the bottom, that the details are always the same and very consistent. It's a kind of a story that begs for elaboration and alteration, but that usually receives little. You mentioned the last time I spoke of the incident that happened to me on my way home, how I always tell the same story the same way. It doesn't change over the years because I'm just reporting what happened to me like I would report it to a cop if I had been robbed on the street. I tell him, the guy was so-and-so tall. He had a knife. He held it to my neck. He ripped off my chain. He took my wallet. I report my abduction experiences in exactly the same way because they're very real events.
And that's why investigators constantly ask for repetition of the story, the report.
Well, from now on, when they come at me with that stuff, I'm going to go, number five. And what about physical evidence? No, I'm not going to elaborate. Number six. The shame of it is, Errol, that with all of this, with everything I just presented right now, that no one, psychologists, psychiatrists, you see figures, maybe people in the mental health profession, no one in law enforcement. Now, we're reporting kidnapping, not by other human beings, but by some unknown agency, taking me from my home, is taking my kids, is doing things to us. We are being violated. The sanctity of my home is being violated. Because I'm not insane, I would never walk into an FBI office and demand police protection because I know they'd either lock me up and put me on medication or escort me to the door immediately. But I wish that I could walk into the offices of the FBI or the local police and say, look, this is happening to me. Is there anything you can do to help me or to investigate this? Because it's a crime. And whether anybody thinks it's flights of imagination or hallucinations and this and that, it's only because they haven't taken the time to study the reports, to study the material, and to educate themselves before making those kind of dismissive and offhand, knee-jerk kind of response answers to it all. And speaking as an abductee, I need some help with this. I want some answers, and I don't want to hear any more BS answers. I want to hear answers that are thoughtful and that address the phenomena, that address the details of the reports, that address the issues.
It's very difficult for the average Joe to get his head around even the possibility that abductees might be telling the truth.
Yeah. Ben, actually, if you want, next time we can talk about fear for 16 or 20 minutes.
Why not?
It's an important element. It
yes.
really is, especially in relation to UFOs and most especially in relation to abductions.
You hear it in people's voices. You read it. I was looking at an article written today by a young skeptic at one of the universities. He writes for the Varsity Rag. And just so uninformed and so belligerently anti and closed-minded about the subject of abductions. It's really amazing.
Well, you know, people are entitled. I'm not trying to, you know.
It's okay to lay back and say, well, you know, I have my doubts about that. But to come out and write a scathing article calling abductees lunatics and crazies.
It's the Carl Sagan syndrome. It's mm-hmm. You played that little clip from Wendy where J. Allen Hynek pointed out that Carl Sagan was dismissing UFOs. And when he asked him, well, what do you think of such and such a case, and what do you think of this case, and what do you think of that case, it turns out that Sagan wasn't familiar with any of the material at all. And when asked why, his response was that he just didn't have time for that. You know, when you read those kinds of heavily biased articles like that, that's the kind of an individual you're dealing with, somebody who's just not familiar with the material.
And there, unfortunately, John, we have to leave it. The two-hour version of the program blows segments by real fast.
It's always a pleasure. Speak to you soon.
Soon. Abduction Information Center. You can get there via virtuallystrange.net right on the front page. Go check out the website. John has put a phenomenal amount of work into it. There's all kinds of evidence presented there, photographic evidence of various body marks and strangeness that's happened to abductees. This program starts at 9 o'clock on a Saturday evening. Maybe you can't tune in via 1010, but you can certainly go to CFRB.com and join us right off the top for the whole 2 hours. Let us head down to Alabama. There in Alabama is the man who made this music a couple of years ago. Good evening, Alfred.
And good evening to you, sir.
It's been a couple of 3 weeks, if not more, since you've been on the program.
Yeah, I nipped down to Florida to meet up with Frank Ficino, the author of that new book that's titled Shoot Them Down, and it's a history of what was occurring in the 1952 time frame with regard to our military aviators specifically. And
your military, the American Air Force, yes.
That is correct, and UFOs. I'm sure the Canadians had a hand in it.
Not us Canadians. We're far too polite.
Well,
we would ask them to leave our airspace, and then if they didn't, we would probably take a shot at them and probably deliberately miss.
I found Frank marvelously focused and not obsessive about a subject that really could make one a little obsessive if they, you know, got carried away with themselves. He has a rationality and a diligent ploddingness that, well, frankly, has Stanton Friedman jumping up and down. If Stanton Friedman can get excited about something, I think it's good enough for the rest of us.
I would say. And I quite look forward to having Frank Fascino back on the program again to talk about his new book.
I was talking to him, and he's looking forward to that, too.
I thought that his book was coming out this month, but has it been delayed, or is the official release a little further down the line than
well,
we thought?
Well, it's going to be released as a filament book at UFO Magazine, and that is that electronic e-book that they've got going on over there. And I understand there's going to be some limited paper production via private press from Bill Burns. And then after that, the sky's the limit. But I'll tell you what's really exciting about the Frank Fascino story is that he has managed to piece together a film documentary that supposedly is just really special enough to rip your lips off.
I'd be interested in seeing that, too. Has he shown you any footage?
No, he hasn't, but he has indicated to me that it's some almost 15 years now of collected audio, still photos, and competently filmed film that will illustrate this and generally pretty much rip the old psychic lips right off. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, me too. And we shall see what we shall see, shall we not?
I should hope so. Check this. You mentioned at the top of the program about only 12 UFO sightings out of 600 were deemed worthy of any interest at all?
I think that was 714.
Oh, even worse.
Yeah.
12 out of 714?
714, yeah.
Just with 12 out of 600, that's only 2%. Mm. And you have to multiply that by a factor of 10 to get it up anywhere near where the vetted studies say it should be. Very telling figures there, I think.
Well, it's no threat to the UK's airspace. But as Stuart Miller pointed out, according to the Condyne report,
right.
The left hand and the right hand at the British Ministry of Defense, the Condyne report says they could potentially be a threat. And Mr. Twigg, in responding to that nice friend of Stuart Miller's, who's a British Member of Parliament, she's a Liberal Democrat, Lynn Featherstone. That nice Mr. Twigg, in a written response in the House of Commons, said reports of UFOs are analyzed solely to consider whether there is any reason to believe UK airspace has been compromised by the reported activity.
Yeah, pretty astonishing in the face of what the real problem is. And the real problem is of course they are a threat to national security. It's a no-brainer. If they can get here, they are a threat to our national security.
Potentially, yes.
And I'm just not the only one saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Fascino is saying that. Stanton Friedman is saying that. Richard Dolan is saying that.
Well,
and Robert Hastings is saying
that. Yeah, and certainly Kevin Randall has said that. And many other ufologically known names.
Yeah.
Have all said the same thing. Yes, they are a potential threat. And listen to what Velez was saying just a little while ago. And who better than John Velez to say, hey, these are a threat to us personally?
On the subject of John Velez, he talked about two things that I thought were kind of remarkable. First of all, I believe it was 7 points that needed to be addressed in a study of this thing.
Yes.
And it occurred to me that John's 7 points just completely eviscerate, destroy completely that simian treatment of Susan Clancy in word, thought, and deed, is my suspicion. And when she addresses those 7 points that John iterated, she will have then contributed to some kind of scholarship on the subject. Would you agree?
I would agree. Susan Clancy, who wrote a very down-on-abductees book, despite being taken under Professor John Mack's wing at Harvard. She wrote the book, and then she split the country.
The anti-Mack.
Yes, we couldn't get a hold of her to do an interview, which is just too bad. Alienview.net is Alfred Lemberg's website. Colorful, imaginative, poetic, just a damn fine website to go and visit regularly.
Content to read, content to hear, content to see.
A treat for several senses there, and a couple of as yet undiscovered senses you will find.
And a, I think, competent example of what the late Terence McKenna predicted in about 1983
mm-hmm.
about what people were going to be using the Internet for. I think I stand proud as at least a competent example.
A shining and colorful example.
Well, I wasn't going to be too effusive about myself, but I can hardly disagree with you.
Well, yeah, exactly. and you have the most phenomenal eye for colors that just leap off the screen and rip your lips off.
Well, folks really ought to sail on over to my blogspot at alienviewgroup.blogspot.com, mm. alienviewgroup.blogspot.com, and see just an entire series of stuff just guaranteed to poke their eyes right out of their head.
Over and over again, and it doesn't matter if you only have two eyes.
No. The art helps you grow new ones.
Ah, that's the secret.
You know, getting back to John, he was very poignant about his heartfelt plea for, hey, I want some answers about this stuff. And it occurs to me that John's behavior is going to be just the kind of mechanism, just the kind of facility that would do what's necessary to get those answers. And what that means is better, superior questions, braver questions, more intelligent questions. Exploring questions, truth-seeking questions, creative questions, progressive questions, you know? Did I mention more courageous questions? And questions that demand a forthcomingness will certainly be the ticket to getting those answers that we really need, whether we know it or not.
You, of course, know that ain't nobody going to answer those questions.
Well, I think when enough people are asking the questions, it's kind of hard to stay away from. And if you'll notice, too, you know, in our accelerating time stream to the concrescence in 2012.
Uh-huh.
At any rate, yeah, the approaching singularity. The point being is that I've noticed that karma seems to be having a quicker kickback these days, and that is also something that is accelerating with our technology and our medical capability and our computer ability. All of these things that are accelerating and on this upward asymptotic curve line that's, well, I'll tell you, about the 2012 time frame, everything's just going to be moving into hyperspace at the speed of light. You know, and you can quote me.
Should we still be here in 6 years, then I shall, definitely. I will play you a portion of what you just said back and say, see?
I think, as long as I'm being a complete wackadoodle here, I want to go full tilt boogie and say that I suspect that millions of people that are now living will never die. That's certainly where a niggard science seems to be heading. And speaking of a niggard science, Mr. Pilat asked about this threat that's on the UFO updates list. Y-E-T. That's something that Jacques Vallée, I think, has written a book about. And Terence McKenna was in agreement with the fact that it's not so much the smarter question to, you know, wonder what E.T. is, or what ETs are, it's what they do. And what they do, according to McKenna and Vallée, is they discredit that niggard science. Mask themselves from what they really are, too, additionally. I hear the music, Errol.
That music means that our 2 hours on the radio has expired, and our all-too-brief time together has also expired, Alfred Lemberg. Thank you, sir.
Well, I'll put myself in stasis until the next one.
Well, good. And we shall be with you in 2 weeks again. Good night, Alfred Lemberg. AlienView.net is his site. VirtuallyStrange.net is this program's website. Thank you to Julian McNabb here in Toronto, Jim Pacheco, Dave Furlott, Stuart Miller, John Velez, and Eric. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mastardelli.